not being able to live up to last week's intro brings you
Phoenix City.
Welcome to Phoenix City. We are down a man. Frosty is sitting this one out. He's been yellow carded too many times this season so far.
I think it's more of a wife's out. And yeah. So he's looking after the child.
I like to think that he accumulated too many podcast violations when he was hosting, and we've asked him to sit this one out. So that's what I like to think.
That's a fair and accurate summarization.
Cam is eating some
chicken wings. We're at King's. I always eat chicken wings at King's.
Exactly. So if you don't hear Cam talk for a while, that's why.
That's good.
That's probably good, yeah. Well, yeah. But Dave is also here as well. You've heard him.
Hello,
already.
Hello.
And that is us. Let's talk about some football. The Phoenix got a nil draw against Brisbane Roar in Brisbane, which, on the whole, probably a good result.
I think it's a good result and probably a fair result, but we should have won it.
Yeah, it's a hard one because I agree. I think we should have won it, but I also wonder how much of that is Phoenix tinted glasses, because I think I've seen some Brisbane fans who also felt like they should have won it. And like I certainly felt like there were good periods of the game. We dominated. We had a pretty clear cut chance that Taylor missed,
and
some other good
have
chances.
Scored, yeah.
And they had some decent chances too, though. So I can see how if you're wearing your orange tinted glasses, you might well be feeling like you should have had 3 points here.
Yeah, it feels like a classic nil draw where both teams had their chances and neither can put them away, and that's the kind of the way.
But
the game went.
It did feel like we were more dominant for longer periods. But it's hard to not have a bias on that.
And
we had the best chance of the game, and we had long periods where we looked the better team.
Yep, and also they finished the stronger.
Yeah,
so did. I think that it might also cloud the judgment on the other side as well, because. Yep. They effectively were catching up to us in the stats rather than being level pegging the whole way along.
And it was still nil all at that point. If we'd put away the goal we should have put away, it would have been 1-0 at that point. And they, despite having the better kind of last 15, last 10, would have been fighting for a draw rather than a win.
It's like what we said last week in the Jets game. We were up 1-0 for most of that game. And therefore, it seemed like we were in control. Newcastle Jets had all the ball and they were doing all the things. Yeah. And I think if it was like this in this case, it would feel the same, where we'd be 1-0 up and Brisbane would be trying to get back into it, but we couldn't quite do it. And so, it would make it look like we were in control, but actually both teams were doing their thing. So,
yeah. So all in all, it's probably a fair result. I say, we really should address that Taylor miss.
That's not good.
That was, I want to say it fell to the wrong person.
Why was he up there? What was he doing up there?
Yeah, no.
He pushes forward a lot, though.
He does.
That's a long way forward, though.
That is
but he does that a lot.
You're the closest player to goal. Why is Taylor that person?
So it definitely fell to the... Well, I want to say it we fell to the wrong person. But of all the people apart from your strikers it falls to, the dude that's been playing EPL is the guy I want it to fall to. So yeah. I'd back myself to score that, so yeah.
I wouldn't back myself.
It was a bad miss. Let's not get anything wrong about that. But we've had much worse misses as the Phoenix and as the A-League before. This is not, people were talking about the miss of the season already. I'm sorry, that's not going to be the case. There will be a worse miss this season in the A-League.
100%.
For sure. And so it's a bad miss. It's not good. He should have scored that. But it's A-League football. We see worse than this on a regular basis. Yeah. And it just happens that he's the EPL player doing it. So it feels a bit more glaring.
It stands out.
We literally get 20-minute blooper videos at the end of every season that is full of 20 minutes of this exact thing.
And this will make those blooper videos,
absolutely,
for sure.
It'll be on there, but they'll be alongside a lot of other things. Yes, he should have scored. Yes, he'll be the first person to say, I should have scored, but hey, we move on. We had another 85 minutes in the game to try and put one away, and we couldn't, so he's not the reason we didn't win this.
At the end of the game, the first thing he said, because he was interviewed by Adam Peacock, first thing he said was, don't ask me about that. Before they went on air, Peacock let that slip as the very first thing on the interview. It was quite amusing. So, yeah, it was pretty glaring. But, yeah, there were some standout performances, actually. I was really, really impressed with Doyle. I thought that was possibly the best performance I've seen from him in a Knicks shirt. It was commanding in the air. His positional play was excellent. Apart from the one time he got left on his face by the Brisbane winger's turn, he was by far our standout defender.
You know what the highlight that's going around Instagram at the moment is from the A-League? It's that moment there.
So. It's an interesting one because the pitch was atrocious. Yeah. People were slipping in those sandy patches all the time, and that's one of the sandy patches he falls in. Like, he absolutely gets done, but I think on any other pitch in the A-League, he doesn't fall on his face like that. I think that there's an element of hard, dry ground that causes him to fall that way. He's still been absolutely done, and, you know, oh, well.
On the level of Tom Doyle mistakes, I had this at his time at the Phoenix. I have this second behind the self falcon, which led to a goal opposition.
No, he scored an own goal where he just passed the ball into the center gross
mountain. I have my third.
No, that is worse because it ends in directly a goal.
The other two things are more embarrassing.
This one doesn't end in a goal, so
probably should.
I thought he was unlucky to be. To not be player of the match. He was excellent. He saved some goals for sure with a couple of his blocks. They were just phenomenal. It was easily one of his best performances, particularly if you mark out that. But I think even including the, you know, getting absolutely done down the sideline, he was excellent.
We've seen players do worse, just that he happened to fall over at this point.
It looks a lot worse than it was. If he hadn't probably got a stud stuck in the ground or something, it would have been all right. No,
it's absolutely the turf that's caused this one.
The interesting one is the opinion seems rather divided on Sarpreet. A lot of people think it was easily his worst game. He, you know, was one of the worst players on the park. I disagree. I think he definitely had some bad moments for sure. His shooting was terrible, but he was creating the chances for himself. And I think in terms of kind of creative play, the only reason he was ending up in those positions was because some of the good stuff he was doing. It just wasn't his day with his shooting boots, but some of his turns and some of his passes to get himself into those spaces and get other people into space was really, really good. But I think in classic, I'm going to say Phoenix, but the reality is it's football fan style. We're so focused on a couple of mistakes rather than actually all of the really good stuff he was doing. It wasn't his best game by any stretch, but he was not the weakest link on the field.
The same thing as Redenton, right? Redenton would make those couple of mistakes in a game, but he would do a whole lot of good work, but people would slag him off because he's made those couple of mistakes. Whereas, actually, and at the same time, this is Sarpreet's second season in the A-League, essentially. He played a few games the one before, but he didn't really get a proper start to the season last year. But this is his second season, and I think people are getting ahead of themselves on what they should be expecting from him. Yes, he's a starting player for the team, so he should be giving enough to start for the team. And yes, he's on the billboards and things like that, but he's still, what, 18, 19?
Yeah, he's a young kid.
He's a young kid finding his feet in the A-League, and he's not going to be Marco Rojas carving up the A-League immediately.
Do you know what?
He's not going to be able to do that every single game.
I think in this game we did see elements of that. We just didn't see him shooting.
Yeah.
When he got to that last touch, he shanked a few. But actually, in the build-up play, he was as good as some of the Rojas stuff we've seen, just obviously through the middle rather than down the side.
But because he was creating those challenges, it looked worse than it was. But so many players in the A-League miss. Lots of players miss.
And everybody in the A-League has an off game quite often. It's just the level we're playing at. He's 18 and he's had an off game, if you can even call it that. I wouldn't be putting too much stock in that at this stage.
Yeah. What do we think of the other imports, having sent them for a second game now?
I thought Curto was good.
Yep.
He made one excellent save really late, which was really nice, and did everything right with it too. Pushed it wide away from the goal, away from the other attacking players that were coming through. So it's a really good piece of goalkeeping. I was really, really happy with him. And it's nice. I thought this at the time when he collected a couple of the balls that came in. It's like, actually, you know what? I didn't realise quite how worried I was in previous seasons with my keeper. And then I see him collect these so comfortably, and I'm like, oh, that's a worry I don't have anymore, and I didn't even know I had it. So that was good.
He also does one thing that I think a few people have been criticising him for, and I'm not sure how I feel about it, but he does love to punch rather than catch. And with some of the keepers in the A-League, that would worry me a lot. But he looks very comfortable when he's punching. He's made the decision very early. Yeah. And I actually don't mind that much. Like, it'd be great if he was catching them, sure. But I would much rather a keeper who's sure in their decision and executing that decision well, rather than keepers who try and catch it and drop it. He's going, nope, yeah, I'm punching, and he punches well.
I think he did it more in the Jets game, and it was easy to tell because that was happening right in front of us and we could see it. But those punches were going 20, 30 metres away. Like, they weren't just going to a guy on the top of the box. They weren't little flimsy pushes of the ball. It was going miles, and danger was essentially cleared. So from that perspective, it's nice. And I agree with you. It's nice having to not worry about your keeper. I mean, last year was obviously dire for goalkeeping at the club. But having spent the import slot on Curto, yes, it's an import goalkeeper. And last time we had one of those, it was Tony Warner, and it didn't go well for us. But this time I think that was the right decision. There's no A-League option for us available at the moment. There's no Kiwi option available at the moment. And we've signed someone who's probably better than anything we could get among those options, even if one of them was there.
I think that's right. I think there is the possibility of finding Australian or Kiwi keepers who are the same level as him. But there are none of them available at the moment. I think that's the thing. I don't think we've got ourselves, you know, some kind of world-leading keeper here. We've got ourselves a good A-League keeper.
But if we could get
Marinovic, it's cost us an import because the other good A-League keepers are already signed either in the A-League or elsewhere around the world.
Yeah. If we get Marinovic, we would have done that in a heartbeat.
Correct.
Like, we would have
probably
done
Gleeson as well. Same scenario.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm happy with that.
Mandy and Rufa, again, that combination looks good.
It does look good.
Wasn't quite a standout as the first game.
Mundy.
Sorry, I'm going to get that wrong all year, aren't I?
I'm always going to correct you because this is my shining moment.
Please do.
It's the first time I get to correct somebody on the pronunciation of a player name.
You have earned that right as well.
150 episodes. Oh, by the way, there's a 150 episode, by the way.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, did you know that? Sorry.
No, I wasn't aware. Yeah. Awesome.
I was just going to casually drop 150 episodes, and I finally got to correct somebody. So,
Mundy looks good. Still, I don't know whether that pace, or the lack of pace, is genuinely a thing. He just doesn't have it, and whether that will come later on as he gets more match fit.
Riera didn't have pace.
No, but his positional play is good, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like Riera.
Yeah, and he's freeing up Rufa, and certainly helping cover for Rufa as well, which is really good. So Rufa's delivering what he can deliver, which is excellent.
Yeah, I think we just need to see a little bit more match fitness from him, and he'll be excellent. I think that's the only thing that was lacking was he did tire. It's in Brisbane, that's understandable, but I think with more of a season under his belt, he will be excellent.
And he had 2 weeks of preseason. Everyone else had at least like 2 months because we signed nobody in that period. But he had 2 weeks of preseason, and I can't remember what he was doing beforehand, but I'm guessing he was in off-season, so it makes sense that he wouldn't be to the same level as the others. So the trick is over the next few weeks getting that fitness up. So, but yeah.
I don't think it was a bad performance. As I say,
absolutely not.
But there wasn't really a bad performance in the team. It just looked like two fairly evenly matched teams. He had a good away performance, basically.
And this game felt like it was going to be 1-0 either way, 3 periods of it, and it ended up being 0-0, and that's probably fair.
And you know, I picked these teams to be beside each other in the table.
Yeah.
Eighth and ninth, so I think they're pretty evenly matched teams, to be honest.
It was nice seeing that some of the good signs we'd seen the previous week against the Jets wasn't just a one-off.
Yeah.
And that the tactical analysis that Rudan's doing on these other teams is actually working. It was a different performance, for sure, but it was nice to see that was applied well.
Yeah. Speaking of tactics, it was interesting here in the post-match interviews from the Raw, them talking how it's hard to play against a team who didn't attack.
We had the same number of shots as them in the whole game.
Like, it was a very interesting assessment of how they felt about the game, that we just sat back and defended. That for me, in many ways, bodes well for our defence, that they felt like we had extra men back there and were, you know, just setting up a wall, because we weren't doing that. We were still getting forward and we were attacking on the counter and we created a lot of chances. So if your opposition is feeling like they basically were just playing a team who were trying to sit back and defend only, that's a good thing, in my opinion. If you weren't doing that they felt that way about it, that's a sign that we're doing something good to shut them down at that end of the field.
Also, looking at the formation that we're setting up with, we all agreed that we're going to be playing some counter-attacking football.
Absolutely.
Which means that when we've got the ball, we're going to be quite happy holding it in our back line until those gaps, or we go fast.
And because we have Roy Krishna and David Williams, two of the quickest players in the league, why wouldn't you play to that strength? And I think this season actually will be one of the first seasons in a long time that we don't concede 50 goals in a season. And I'm going to go on the record now and say that we won't concede 50 goals for the first time in a long time. And that will be the difference between coming ninth and sixth, probably.
I agree. I definitely believe our defence will be the difference between, if we make the playoffs, our defence will be that difference maker.
Unless
we can find a goal scorer.
Yeah, unless things drastically change, we're not going to be scoring 3 or 4 goals a game. but one or two with a good defense means we're getting one all draws, 2-1 wins, and that will be the key this season, I think. Judging from what we've seen in these previous two games, we're not going to go out and set the world alight, but we're going to do classic Sydney FC, win a game 1-0 type thing, I think.
Do you know, 1.5 points a game on average gets you into the playoffs.
Exactly.
So, and that's, to be fair, you'd probably actually finish fifth or maybe even fourth if you did that.
Yeah.
You only need about 35, so... Yeah. I'm quite comfortable with the way he's set up, the way he's playing so far. I'm comfortable with we're going to score a couple of goals a game. We'll get wins, we'll get the occasional loss, and we'll probably get some draws, and yeah, it's fine. We'll probably make the playoffs.
Yeah.
To be fair, I don't think Newcastle this season is anywhere near as strong as they were last season, and I don't think Brisbane's going to be pushing the top, and I also think when we play Wanderers this weekend, they're going to be down the bottom as well.
But that's quite a nice way to start the season.
It is. I think the test will come in the following week when we play City. That'll be it. And when I see how we do against them, even if we don't win, if we lose, the performance that we put in there and how we set up, I think, and how competitive we are will... answer a few more questions around how we're going to do for the season.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's really good that we have this start to the season and that we can put some of the tactics that we're trying to work on in place against slightly weaker opposition and then test ourselves. With a new coach in place and a new system and new players, I think that's a good way to do it rather than jumping in and playing Sydney FC first up, Melbourne Victory first up. Well, yep. Melbourne Victory is not the team at the moment. That was a bad example. But
well, and let's not forget that the Jets came second last year and have essentially the same team. And we're talking them down as not as strong as they were last year. I think they're... We may be just judging too much off two performances. I think they're starting slow, but I think across the league, they might well still be a contender at that top end. I'm not willing to write them off yet. I think we're lucky to have caught them at a time when they're not at their peak, but I do think they might be a contender. So that's three really good points there potentially. And I think we all agree we're probably reasonably matched with the Roar, and we showed that. We showed, you know, we're going to nick some points here or there. We're going to have some holdout results, and that's going to be how we're going to make the six. We're not going to be pushing for top one or two, but we're going to get enough points to eke in there, and that's good.
That's fine. I have no problem with that. After the last 5 years that we've had here, I'm perfectly okay with not finishing first.
And I'm sure someone like Rudan would be saying we shouldn't be underselling ourselves. You know, we could win the league, and you know, that should be aspirational goal. But as a fan, I'll be very happy with fifth or sixth. After some of the seasons we've had recently, new coach in, not exactly the ideal kind of process for bringing in the players he wanted and stuff during the offseason. He's missed out on some stuff he wanted there. And if we finish fifth or sixth, as a fan, I'll be pretty happy with that.
Our position at the moment, fourth place on the table, I'll be stoked with that coming into the season. I'm stoked with that now, and it's only early doors.
I'm going to call that first equal.
What?
I'm going to call it first equal because we've got the same number of points as first.
So. We're fourth, though.
I know, goal difference and goal scored, but I'm still going to call it first equal.
I'm not so like, obviously I'll be happy with first equal, but I'm stoked with fourth. Like, I'll be really happy.
And it's our equal best start to a season, isn't it? We've never got 7 out of 3. 4 out of 2 is our best evers. We've done that three times.
Yeah.
Yes, this is probably a good time for you to apologise, actually, Patrick.
It is a good time for me to apologise. Last time you said that this was only the second time we won our first game of the season, and I said that was incorrect and provided some examples. My examples were wrong, and Cam, your stat was 100% correct.
I wish I'd actually backed myself, but I also wish I had evidence to prove it.
Oh, so. I was absolutely sure that you're wrong. My confusion came in when I was thinking of home openers, not just season openers, and... It is definitely not the first time we've won our first home game.
Definitely not the first time Patrick's been wrong on the podcast.
No, but usually I'm not so adamant that I'm correct. Usually I at least have some doubt, whereas this time I did not, and I was 100% wrong.
I was sure I was right, but I couldn't prove it. So.
Exactly, yeah. So that was that. Sorry about that.
Let's hope this season doesn't go that way.
Yeah, this is the first time since that 2012-13 season that we've got a win and a draw to start the season, and that's a long time. That's 6 years ago, which is... A long time. That was Ricky and Louis Fenton scored. He's just making his debut back at the time. It's a while back that we've had a start like this to the season. And obviously, it's very early, and we're not going to extrapolate these two games across the whole season, but it's promising.
Well, and it's very ripe for the picking for it to be our best start of the season ever this weekend as well. I mean, we're up against a team who also don't look that great. This is 3 points that I think we feel like we can take pretty comfortably here. So you'd have to say, coming off two pretty decent results and a start we're happy with, you know, the next match equally looks like it could go really well for us.
All right, let's jump around the rest of the round before we get on to that game that we're talking about. Adelaide United and the Newcastle Jets had a 1-1 draw to kick things off. Who got the goals there? my app won't load for me. So that's great. The Mariners and Melbourne City also had a 1-1 draw. Dario Vidicic got a late equaliser for Melbourne City there. It was a pretty messy goal, that one, I think. It was rebounds and deflections and all sorts of things.
I think it was like the fourth of four shots that went in there. It was really ugly.
Yeah. Sydney FC had a 2-0 win over the Western Sydney Wanderers. This was VAR affected. Do we start putting asterisks next to games that were VAR affected and just kind of discount them in the grand scheme of things? Because Rowley's goal should have stood.
Rowley's goal 100% should have stood. 100%. That was definitely a goal.
Like the fact that Zullo, I mean, you need to have seen the clip for any of this to make sense, but the fact that Zullo, who's the one who they rule, could have got to the attacker if he wasn't being impeded by an offside player. He was running towards the ball. It wasn't the attacking player in the offside position that prevented him from playing this. It was his own poor decision making.
Yeah, there's two players he can run for, and he runs to the wrong player. Yeah. And then tries to stop
and turn, but even then it would have been too late. And so
it was
bullshit that they talked this off.
And the attacker who impedes him doesn't really do anything wrong. He's in an offside position. He tries to retreat to an onside position for the next play.
Yeah.
And without really seeing Zullo, they run into each other. Yeah. He doesn't grab him. He doesn't try and foul him. There's some contact between them. They both fall over.
If Zullo was sprinting in the direction to get to the attacker before the ball went, and he collided with the offside player, I'd have no problem with this. Player offside, clearly impeding the defender, let's call it. But the fact that Chris Beath did an interview afterwards and he said it was offside and that kind of thing, and then Adam Peacock asked him, was there any communication between the AR and you about this? The fact that the AR is standing right there, it's on his side of the pitch, didn't even consider this could possibly be offside, it's just farcical.
And Chris Beath never signals offside either.
He signals foul. Yep. And it's just...
We have an example from, is it 2 years ago?
No, last season in the playoffs. Last season in the playoffs, Sydney FC scored a goal.
From
exactly
a much, much worse example than this, where a player actually could have got to the ball and is impeded, and they let it stand.
And I'm fine with that. I'm fine with going on the on-field call. Gallup has come out and said that... Was it Gallup or O'Rourke? I can't remember.
I can't remember.
They both... No, that's harsh on O'Rourke.
Okay. I think it was O'Rourke better. Actually.
It was... They came out and said that they've instructed, and I assume this comes from Ben Wilson, head of referees, that they've instructed the VARs to stop nitpicking the game, because that is what they're doing at the moment, is they are nitpicking decisions that are being made on the field.
Yeah.
No one has a problem if this goal stands. Absolutely nobody on that pitch cares if this goal stands. They prefer it. It's
Well, and the big thing here is they're meant to be pointing out clear and obvious errors. This is not clear and obvious.
Yeah.
This is one you can argue both ways, similar to the handball with Sapri, you know, and the Sapri one, I'm more okay with it being ruled out because he eventually comes in off his arm.
Yeah.
But this one is, as you say, nitpicking. It's not clear and obvious. No one in the three referees who are out there thinks this isn't a goal.
Yeah.
Why are we relitigating something that's marginal at best?
Yeah. It's just a farce. And it makes me want to not watch the A-League anymore. But like, that's plain and simple. I didn't see this game, and I watched the next morning. I went, this is just shocking. The fact that we're chalking off a goal like this.
Yeah.
It's just, people want to see goals. We were talking to a referee friend of ours, and there's a thing that referees follow. It's what football expects. And in this case, what football expects is this goal stands. The Sapri one, football expects that you score a goal with your hand, we probably chalk that off. But in this case, football expects that this is a play with lots of things happening. This goal should stand. And the fact that the VAR comes in and just goes against all common sense and doesn't overrule a clear and obvious error.
And the incorrect signal and stuff says they're not even necessarily sure what they were ruling for. Because I think an experienced referee like Beath doesn't mess up. If he's calling offside, he doesn't make the wrong hand signal. I think at that level, it's second nature. It's like talking. It's like sign language. You know, he knows it so well. If he's making an offside call, he signals offside. You know, at an amateur level, or, you know, some social grade, I wouldn't be reading much into a hand signal. But a referee at this level, he knows what he's doing.
The turnaround of Fox on VAR has been quite stark as well. Obviously, they were quite for it. And to be fair...
Disagree. They love controversy.
That is true,
and
actually.
So they are still on the side of the controversy. Last season, everyone thought it was a bad idea, so they were in favour of it. This season, they just want the referees to be wrong, so talking about how it's wrong and controversial is exactly what they're doing again.
Old Boz's rant after the Sydney game was quite impressive.
Bozza's rants aren't written by Bozza. Bozza's rants are things that someone tells Bozza to go off about because they know they'll get views about on it afterwards. I don't think that all of this probably
that's a little too tinfoil hat.
Probably Bozza in this case does believe this, but like he's an entertainer. He's there to entertain people and stoke the fire, and that's what Bozza does. So I don't give Bozza much time. And then the round was rounded out by Melbourne Victory stinking up the joint again, going down 2-0 early to Perth Glory, getting back to 2-2, then giving up a goal very late on to Chris Economidis.
Great watching.
Hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
I saw the first half. I was really, really disappointed with Victory. Saw no way back into
it. They're terrible.
So I went to bed.
Yeah.
And I missed the best part of that game.
Yeah. The Victory are not good this season, but you think that they fought themselves back in with goals to Antonis and Storm.
And they were very good through that period. Yeah. To say they're not good is a bit harsh. I think they have had very good patches of football and looked like a team that could win the league, and then had the results not go their way for various reasons. Like this time, they had let two goals in before they started playing some football.
Yeah.
And then they looked very good for a long period of time and thought, sweet, we've got ourselves back to a draw. That's a good result here, and kind of took their foot off the pedal a little. And, oh, no, now we've stuffed it again.
Yeah, it was nice seeing Stormer on the score sheet.
Yeah, and the first round, you know, they were arguably robbed by a VAR decision. Yeah. So, you know, again, I think they have good reason to feel hard done by, but they have played good football in there.
So far, though, not as good as I expected them to be.
No.
I genuinely expected them to walk their first two games, even against Perth, who look fantastic.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You don't expect the champions to lose their first two games.
No.
Under any circumstances.
No, I agree.
So, yeah, it's quite interesting because I've picked them to win everything. I picked them to win the league and the grand final. It's early days to say that's wrong, but
I may have to
revise that in a couple of weeks' time.
Anyway, this weekend we take on the Western Sydney Wanderers. We've talked about it slightly already, but this is Saturday at 7:35 p.m. at the Ring of Fire.
I believe there's a curtain raiser as well.
Yeah, we'll get to that later on. There's a Wenix playing at 4:45 beforehand. But I am quietly confident. I haven't been confident about the previous two games. I thought we were going to lose against the Jets, and I thought that we were probably going to lose against the Roar, but a draw might be fair. But this time is the first time this season I think that we might actually win this one, which is different for me.
Last season, we barely picked us to win a game at all.
I didn't pick us. Like my tipping used to be if the Phoenix were at home, I'd tip them to win. If they're away, I'd tip them to lose. Last season, I just tipped everything to lose, and it worked out well for me. Whereas this season, I'm not actually going to do that anymore, and I think that we might come up with something better than just a draw here.
Wanderers have looked pretty poor so far.
Yep.
They have some amazing attacking talents. I mean, Bonavazzi, obviously, and Oriol Riera, they're good players.
Mm.
They've got a decent manager who won't be on the sidelines for the game. So it's hard to see why they're not quite firing. But if we can take advantage, and I genuinely believe we can, then, yeah, I agree with you, Pat. I can see us winning this.
By the same token, we're not quite firing either. We're not getting Roy Krishna and David Williams and Sarpre creating chances left, right and centre. So it could go both ways, and it could be another nil. But I don't think that's the reason why I think we're going to win this one. I think that we're just going to be defensively sound enough and we'll sneak a goal. I think it'll be 1-0. But I can see both teams being defensively okay, and I would love for Roy and Williams in that attacking lineup, Burns, when he comes on to fire, but I don't think that'll happen this week either. But I don't know what your thoughts are, Dave.
No, I think we should win this. I like to think this is the week it's going to come together for us. I think them on the road without their coach, I think this probably isn't the time they turn it around and start hitting, you know, their peak. Whereas I think we are feeling very confident with our two performances, where we're happy, the things we want to be doing are working well, and there's only movement up for us. We're back at home, and yeah, I think we finally start seeing some of those combinations working, and maybe we put two or three past them, and that would be fantastic.
So if you had to put a score on it,
I'm going to go 3-1 to us.
2-0 to us.
Nice. I've said 1-0 already.
What do you reckon the crowd's going to do this weekend? Forecast isn't great.
The crowd's going to get annoyed if they play music again, and that's what the crowd's going to do. But
yes. I don't think it's a big crowd.
No, I think classic 7,000.
Yeah, 7,500, 8,000, I think, will happen here.
You don't think that the 10K booth, the 10K payment, you know, rent or random nope. fan will boost it this weekend?
Well, the thing about it is we got 9 season opener, which is good, but at season opener you get a bit of a bump there. I don't think these results and stuff are enough that people are talking about it around town yet. And I don't think many people know about the 10K thing yet. I think as the season goes on, people will talk about that more and more, particularly if the team are still doing well. But at this point, I think you could ask average Joe blogs on the street and they don't even know the season started yet.
Yeah.
I think we need to be 5 or 6 rounds deep and doing well before people start talking about that. And then that starts having that effect.
So what the Warriors last year, they won their first 4 games in a row or something, and that's when the buzz started. So we're not going to – obviously, there's no draw in NRL, but we're not going to win our first 4 games. But it'll be that point that we get it rather than just a few results, if we're ever going to get it. But, yeah, I think you get your hardcores minus a few because it's at 7:30 on a Saturday rather than 5 o'clock on a Sunday. So
weather's supposed to be rubbish as well.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. So, yeah, okay, I'll refine down to 6.5 rather than 7.5. So, it'll be fine without being amazing. And I think that's the point we have to accept we're at.
I think it'd be really good if we can hit that 10K early, though, while we're doing well. That'd be fantastic, because the second we give away, at this point, we're up to 12,000. Is that what they're giving away?
They say it jackpots, I think. So.
Well, they're
it'll be 1,000 a game plus goals. We scored 2 last home game, so it's 12. Yeah. So I think it'll be at least 12 in the next one.
Yeah. So I think if we give away $12,000, that makes a decent amount of media coverage. I think, it gets reported on the radio. I think it probably makes the paper, even if it's not a story in itself, it at least gets a mention, and then people start talking about it.
Yeah. Nah. It's not the reason I go to football, so kind of just discount it, but I assume that it is a thing for some people.
I think it might be a factor that people will definitely go, nah, if we get the opportunity, we can go along and have some entertainment with the kids. Worth it.
Yeah. Someone who won't be playing this weekend, I've forgotten his name, but the marquee that we tried to sign, someone Rossi.
Giuseppe Rossi.
Yeah. We tried to sign a marquee, and this is all hearsay at the moment. There's been no official anything. But given that there was a search for other marquees going on, you can imagine it. One might be correct. But Giuseppe Rossi deemed not to be a Class A marquee by the FFA, and they won't help fund it to the extent that we wanted them to. So that's not happening, which is a shame. But
I saw some confusion on social media of people thinking they wouldn't allow him to be a marquee. That's not what's happened here. What we're not allowed to get is the maximum amount of money from the marquee fund.
That's what they wanted, yeah.
And that would have gone a long way to helping support whatever salary he's asking for, and clearly without that money we're a bit short.
Which is understandable.
Yep.
And it's probably understandable from an FSA's perspective as well. You don't want to blow full funds on someone that Patrick Barnes has never heard of before, because I had never heard of Giuseppe Rossi.
See, I don't think we're ever getting access to that fund.
I think we are.
Maybe that tinfoil hat, but I don't think the FFA gives us any.
Well, the good thing about this fund is, unlike the old Tim Cahill fund, there are transparent rules around how this fund works. And so you tick the boxes, you get the money. Now, I don't have access to exactly what the criteria are, but all of the clubs do. They're well aware of what this is. And I think the issue here is that there are some that they've tried to argue their way into, probably, that are marginal at best. So I think there's talk of current international player, like he's obviously a top tier international player, but not currently.
Unlike Honda,
for example. And so some of those ones I think we've tried to talk our way into. Oh, he's only not in the national squad because he was injured last season, you know? I can see how we tried that on and hoped it would work, but I can also see how we got bumped down to a B or a 3 or a 2 or whatever these categories really are. But
to be fair, the fact that Samuel Eto'o wasn't considered an A, then Giuseppe Rossi is definitely not being considered.
Well, the difference here is Eto'o's a bit older. He's definitely on the decline, whereas Rossi's only 31. He's still got years left in him, but he's been injured, which I think is what's dragging him down here.
Yeah, whereas Eto'o still scoring goals regularly at top level in Europe, and former African Player of the Year, Champions League winner. The guy's done everything in the game you can do. He is the name that drags people in.
Yeah,
and they're not giving him A status. Then Giuseppe Rossi's not.
I don't think he drags anyone in.
I think.
To be totally honest, I think he would have a couple of years ago. I think everyone understands now he's a bit old. Did Robbie Fowler drag people in a few for 1 or 2 games? Then it died off because everyone knew he wasn't that up to it anymore, right? He was just there for the paycheck.
I don't know what he was doing at Glory and Fury. Like, I don't know what the impact was of the crowd numbers, but at here,
yeah,
the crowd,
we only had one game with him
exactly,
here.
And there was a boost, so it worked.
Yeah, but obviously the Fury collapse obviously didn't help them enough, right? But, I don't mind that the FFA's knocking people back.
No.
I would prefer that than to see the central body funding lots of B-grade marquees.
Well, and the thing is, they will fund it. It's just at a different level.
And like we see Honda. Honda is absolutely great to have in the league, and he does create that media interest thing. So I can see why they're using it where they are. And I don't really have a problem with it.
The key thing here is at least it's a process rather than just a random pick.
Which is
when they gave the $1 million or whatever it was to Tim Cahill and City, there was no one else could compete for that fund. It was just, we've decided this one person gets the whole bloody thing. That's insane. Yeah. Now there is a fund of several $1 million that's contestable by all clubs. Admittedly, it's more contestable to some because they have the bank to attract someone like Honda, whereas we're attracting a Rossi, which doesn't quite meet the criteria. But, you know, at least we know where we stand. If we want to bring in a Honda, we know what we've got to do to access the money for it. Yeah. That makes a lot more sense.
It's basically stumping up the rest of the money. And, yeah, and that sounds like what the tripping factor here is, that we couldn't get enough money elsewhere to pay for it, given if they wouldn't give us what we were asking for from there. The rest of the round, we get kicked off on Friday night with Melbourne City taking on Sydney FC at Amy Park. I don't know how that goes. Probably Sydney. That's what we didn't talk. We didn't talk about the FA Cup final, which was 2-1 to Adelaide over Sydney FC.
To be fair,
in Adelaide, I didn't watch any of it. I don't know anything, but I just found it interesting that in a big game, Sydney FC didn't win. That's probably the key bit of information to take from this.
I do know it was won by a very, very nice goal.
Yeah, Craig Goodwin got two, and he in the 89th minute, he's trying to time waste down by the corner. Two Sydney players, he nutmegs them both in one move, and then runs it on goal. It was quite impressive.
Nice,
but yeah, Sydney FC.
Yeah, second goal was beautiful.
Yeah, given that Sydney FC played a Tuesday game and they're playing Friday night as well, I think Melbourne City edge this.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think City get this. And we should say congratulations to Vinny and Galloway, the two ex-Phoenix that are that won the FFA Cup.
That's more
great to see you get a trophy.
More congratulations to Vinny than Galloway, but Newcastle Jets taking on the Melbourne Victory in the grand final rematch. Chances of VAR breaking halfway through this game, pretty high. I think the Jets might edge this 1-0.
So do I, because they're the bogey team.
Draw probably on the cards. It's in Newcastle as well. So.
Yeah, I think Victory get up here finally. They start hitting their straps. They've looked good and they've just been a bit robbed, they would feel, and I think that'll fire them up to go back here for that grand final replay and, you know, go, this is where we start our season for real.
Yeah. And Perth Glory taking on Brisbane Roar is the late game on Saturday. It's at midnight Saturday night. Perth, probably.
Yeah, Perth.
Comfortably. Yeah. Two or three goals on that, I think.
And then Central Coast have the Sunday game, 7 p.m. New Zealand time against Adelaide United. I think that extra couple of days rest for Adelaide will mean that they will still win this one. I can't see Central Coast providing much.
Coast at home?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, I reckon it's going to be a draw, actually.
Oh, yeah. Actually, 1-1 draw has been the way that this league's gone so far, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So,
it has, actually,
It's a smart bet, isn't it? Yeah. I'll go Adelaide just because.
Yeah. Other A-League news this week. Again, nothing is confirmed here, but there are reports that the FFA have decided that this round of expansion won't be moving ahead. There are no strong enough bids to enter the A-League currently, which I think is the correct decision. If you look at all the bids, they were going to try and shoehorn someone in, if anything, and it would be a B-grade team compared to the other 10 in the league, and I think this is the right call.
And the thing out of the story on this, which quotes an industry insider or someone equally anonymous, was that we don't want to set a team up to fail. And I think if they were to rush it through now, that's precisely what they're doing. And I think lots of people who are grumpy about this and going, oh, but we need to do it right now, haven't actually looked at what the requirements on those teams are. And it requires a huge upfront cost. They're expected to pay for the license. Then they're expected to basically self-fund for, I can't remember if it's 2 or 3 seasons.
Three.
One of you's holding up two fingers, one of you's holding up three, so I'll stick with it's 2 or 3 seasons. That's no small amount of money. There's no small amount of time where you're not getting the TV money. This is setting a team up to just scrape through those 2 or 3 years and then be massively in debt, finally getting some money coming in, but now they're struggling and probably fail within 5 years, you'd say, because of that poor footing they've started on. Whereas I think if we take another 12 months or whatever it is to actually adjust how we're doing that, figure out a way we can get them some TV money or something to support them so they're not starting behind the eight ball. The only reason, you know, the Wanderers and City have worked as well as they did is the Wanderers were able to use additional import slots, which made filling some of that team a lot easier. They've also been bankrolled by the FFA.
Yeah.
City It didn't go that well at first until Manchester City stepped in and bankrolled them
with money. And it's to be honest, with both of those teams, the big difference is investment off the field.
Yeah.
The Wanderers had an unlimited budget essentially to run their back office and run their office and coaching staff. And essentially, Melbourne City have that now as well, where they have an unlimited budget to run the back office, and they're one of the most professional teams in the league, producing content on social media, things that is cut above other people because they have the money to do it. And I think the reason why, there's a few reasons why it doesn't work at the moment for someone coming in, but it was a last gasp effort from the Gallup regime to try and retain the support.
The Lowy regime. Gallup's still there.
The Lowy regime. I wish Gallup was gone. To try and retain support from that second division.
It was just a distraction tactic, largely.
And it worked. And now that that's been resolved and not in the Lowy's factor.
Favour.
Whatever. I give up.
You're making a good point. The point I'm trying to make
is that they were grasping at it, and now that they don't have power over the A-League anymore, the reason that TV thing was there was because that was one way to try and get the other A-League clubs to go along with it.
Yep.
But now we don't need that anymore. It's going to have an independent A-League run by the A-League clubs, and they would, I'm sure, like to see more games in a year, and they'll be more open to someone coming in under the right circumstances, under the right financial position to be part of that league, and that's just not going to happen now, and it's not right to do that now.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think importantly, you've nailed another thing there that needs to be sorted out before this makes any sense.
Thank you.
Is the independent A-League. We don't know how that's going to work.
Exactly.
We don't know what the body running that's going to look like. We don't know what the commercial model is going to be like for that. And so I think it makes a lot of sense to at least understand what that's going to be before going, hey, these two new guys are also going to be in that, when we don't even know what that looks like yet at all. I think that needs to at least have some sort of grounding. And we do know that there is a discussion document or proposal that exists that's been worked up by whatever they're called, the Association of Professional Football Clubs, whatever that organization is. They've got an idea of how they'd like it to work, but that's hardly been rubber stamped or even really talked about yet. We need to have some grounding what that's going to look like before we go, oh, and these two new guys with no money are part of it as well.
It's a smart decision because it does give the league a chance not to just work out, you know, what the governance of a new A-League looks like, but it also gives them a chance, looking at the timing, it gives them a chance to resolve Phoenix licensing issues. It gives them a chance to resolve a new television deal, which, because all these things are going to come up. And if you're going into negotiations with Fox and you're saying, well, actually, we're providing an extra game a week because we've got two more teams, it gives those two new teams a little more collateral to stay viable. And it means you're probably going to get a larger return on the discussions that you have with them as well. So it was silly, and I understand why the FFA did it. It was a silly decision to make. It's the right decision to hold it off. And to be honest, I hope they can get it over the line.
Absolutely.
And if God forbid anything bad happened with the Knicks license and, you know, the club did cease to exist, it gives them two seasons to get those three bids ready to take those places. Yeah. So all in all, it's a really smart move.
It's the only move, really.
I think it's important. You've had another thing there. It's important to note, we all think expansion's a great idea. Like, I'm strongly in favour of there being more teams in this league.
But not with these bids.
We don't do it in a way that fucks it up. It needs to be done right. It happened to work, but it was done badly. I think it was a half-assed decision that they just bankrolled until it worked. And that didn't make a lot of sense, but they got lucky.
It was a perfect storm because you had the people that wanted the product. You created the product that was better than it would have been because of the rules that you placed around it.
Yeah.
And you've put all that together in this one spot and it worked.
I put it down to luck.
If you discount the Phoenix as an expansion team and you take the four expansion teams that exist, you've got Gold Coast United, we all know how that went. You've got the North Queensland Fury, we all know how that went.
Yeah.
They only lasted, what, two or three years in the league? You've got Melbourne Heart, and that was going pretty poorly.
It was
going
to go bankrupt.
Exactly.
Except it got saved.
Exactly.
By essentially luck.
And then you've got Western Sydney, who they just happened to fall upon something that worked.
Yeah, I think
by
that's
throwing
the one enough, that should have worked.
Yeah, and by throwing enough resources at it, it did work. And yeah. You look at their crowds at the moment because they're shit, and they're, those crowds are just non-existent. If they had been like that in the first season and not won the league in the first season, or that wouldn't exist. It would be in the same problem the whole time. So they were just so reliant on those results in the first season by having Shinji Ono as your sixth import. Yeah. So
and to be fair, the first three seasons, because then they won the Asian Champions League, obviously, and that crest of the wave drew the fans in. But now they're going to struggle, and it's showing in their crowd. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if their new stadium being finished is going to give them the bump they need. Because at the moment, I think a lot of their planning is around treading water until that's done.
Well, at the same time, a new stadium would make a big difference to the Phoenix. If we had a 12,000 seat stadium, we'd get 10,000 at most of our games.
Yep,
and
agreed.
Just because of the way that it works.
Yep.
And I think that would be the same thing with the Wanderers when they go back to their home.
Yep.
And it's hard not having a home, and having a home that's shit. Mm. It's hard. So anyway. Let's move on to the New Zealand League and the ISPS Hannah Premiership. The TV game this week was Waitaki versus Team Wellington, and Team Wellington got up 3-0 over Waitaki. And if you watch the 5-minute highlights of this on the New Zealand Football Facebook page, there are exactly zero highlights of Waitaki doing things, and it's all T-Dubs highlights. Which says a lot about this game, I think. I don't think they would do that by accident if it wasn't the case. Dave, you saw bits of this?
Yeah, I saw bits and pieces. The T-Dubs were pretty dominant for the whole game. They had a late flurry of goals, which I think probably... I mean, you could argue flattered them, but I think based across their performance across the whole game, 3-0 is reasonably fair. They just waited late to actually score them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that there were a whole bunch of opportunities earlier in the game, judging on the highlights, that they could have scored.
Yeah.
And against other teams, they'll need to score those goals.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But in the second and third game of the season, you still end up winning 3-0. You can't really complain too much about it. So
no.
You get the goals when you need them. Hamish Watson's back heel for Ross Allen's goal was sublime. It was lovely. I didn't even realise what had happened at first. I thought they kind of just ping-ponged around a little bit. But then when you watch the replay, Hamish Watson just...
And you know it must be pretty amazing for Patrick to be praising that particular player.
I am not taking the piss right now. Like, you looked at me like, are you serious? But I'm like, no, genuinely.
No, I'm well aware you're serious. Yeah. I'm just surprised you're saying it.
Yeah.
He seemed to have found his level.
Yeah, absolutely. And that
I think he's found that level a few times before and then
tried to go to the
other. Some people think it's not his level. And then he ends up back there again, which is good because he is very good at that level.
Yes. Yeah. Hawke's Bay had a 2-2 draw with Canterbury United. They got two late goals, in each half. In the 48th minute of the first half, Gary Ogilvy and Stephen Hoyle put Canterbury up 2-1 into the second half, and then Ifes got a 94th minute goal, which is nice to see. Southern United and Auckland City's game got postponed due to a flooded field.
That was in the second half, I think, at that time as well.
Okay, what was the score? Do you know?
No, I don't.
I think it was nil all. I saw a tweet about it. Hamilton Wanderers got a 2-1 win over Tasman in Nelson. And Eastern Suburbs got a 2-0 win over the Wenix. Goals to Dominic Aldridge and Andre de Jong. And if I click on this button on the website, hopefully it takes me straight to next week's draw. No, it's not going to do it. Oh, there we go. Yep. The Wenix this weekend are hosting Waitaki United before the Phoenix at Westpac Stadium, Saturday at 4:45 p.m. The other four games all on Sunday, all at 2 p.m. It is Hamilton versus Southern, Auckland City versus Hawke's Bay, Canterbury versus Eastern Suburbs, and the first Team Wellington home game of the season, technically, because the Waikato was a away game. But they host Tasman United at David Farrington on Sunday. I think we'll all be there in the sun, hopefully.
Can't make that one, unfortunately.
Can't make that one. Oh, no.
The only T-Dubs game I can't make this season.
Oh, no.
Clashes with my father-in-law's birthday.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah, that's okay.
Patrick says he'll be there, but he probably won't.
I won't be there. I actually won't be there. I have rehearsal, but I wasn't going to tell listeners that. I was just going to pretend I was going to be there and make it
sound... What did you think of the Raw game when you watched that the first time?
The Raw game was excellent.
What day did you watch it on?
I've not seen the Raw game, and I bullshitted my way through about 30 minutes of that chat, and you guys had no idea.
I mean, I knew.
You guys... I did. Thank you so much for outing me.
Only hours before you'd said, I'll see you at the pub, and then... No.
Yeah, no. That's fine.
You don't have to justify this, by the way.
I made it through the whole Raw chat and not gave away the fact I hadn't seen the game, and then you guys have just done it there, and I can't bother editing this out. So.
You are welcome.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah. If you want, I could drop an F-bomb in here and then you have to go and edit it out.
Nah, it's fine. Okay. I'm good with this. I'm just getting distracted by Bohemian Rhapsody playing in the
I was going to say it's headbanging in a very short space of time.
Yes. We're not going to do that. We're going to talk about the New Zealand football review and recommendation, the Moya report. That was not right at all.
Are you going to leave that in or you edit that one?
You are definitely doing some editing now.
No, I can't be bothered. Today they've come out and essentially released their action plan for the 22 points that was raised in the report. And there's nothing really that's much of a surprise.
No, there's some good stuff in there, but none of it's surprising. It all lines up nicely with what the recommendations of the report were. And, you know, there's stuff that needs fixing, and it looks like this addresses most of it.
Yeah, it's things that they have to do as a result of the recommendations. And it's nice to see that they haven't just ignored the review and that they're actually going to put some of these things in place, which the Cricket Australia review, by the sounds, hasn't done. They haven't put those recommendations in place and things like that. But it's nice to see our organisation doing that. So
yeah, and if you want to read this, it's on the New Zealand Football website. But, I mean, we could run you through some highlights, but honestly, I don't think there's anything too surprising in there.
I think the biggest point is that on November the 13th, as part of the next Football Ferns camp, there's going to be an actual apology in person about how the whole situation was handled. Obviously, they already had a written apology last month right before the report came out. But there are just good signs in here. The trick is going to be whether they can keep doing these things.
Some of the key things in there are around the appointment of the new CEO, and they identify some stuff that needs to be important there, like people management and culture building. You know, it needs to not just be a business focused appointment. This needs to be someone who's actually going to be a good caretaker, is not the right word, but for the sport and for that organization.
Exactly.
You know, that needs to be a focus there. They need to bring in an HR function to sort out the shambles that is the current HR process. And then once it's fixed, figure out how they're resourcing that ongoing. But for now, they need to bring someone in and actually have some process. There needs to be proper complaints. They need to do stuff with the tour reports. You know, it's all stuff they should have been doing anyway. But hopefully now they will.
I think a lot of this could actually be summed up by they need to communicate better with the government stakeholders.
Everybody.
And they need to actually set up an HR function, because your complaints process and all of the other stuff and your appointments to positions and all of those other things will be dealt with by a decent HR function. So I think those two points could probably cover off everything, and that's just in more detail.
And then there's some structure around the board and the exco and some standing committees that need to exist that should have existed and don't. Better reporting up to the exco. So for example, there's a thing in there around the tour reports actually going to the exco, which it sounds like is happening now, but there needs to be a more standardized form of reporting and a more standardized process for those going to the exco. Whereas at the moment, in the interim, it's an ad hoc, those go to the exco.
It feels like they don't have an adequate office administration function, basically.
Oh, when you had Andy Marner running the office, is that a surprise?
Possibly not. But that
straight bat. Yes. Straight bat from Cam.
You are welcome. but that's what I think. You put in a decent back office function, resolves a lot of these issues in the first place.
And a bit of it seems like there weren't proper checks and balances on so many levels here. You know, it was possible for some of that senior management team to essentially be hiding details from the next steps above them and all that kind of stuff that shouldn't have been the way any of that could work. And so now you're going to have the right checks and balances through, say, the HR person coming in, setting up processes that mitigate that, but also some of the stuff around player complaints processes being anonymous and surveys post-tours and staff surveys taking place regularly and all the stuff that gives the ability for not only checks and balances on some of those formal processes, but an anonymous process where required, so that if things aren't being addressed, they at least are highlighted and brought to the surface somewhere along.
And to New Zealand Football's credit, the one recommendation that they have already been able to take on board and complete was in the appointment of Tom Samani as Football Ferns coach, was that they needed to have a PFA presence on that panel. And I think Harry Nata sat on the interview panel for that job and was able to approach it from a player perspective, which, judging by the appointment that they made, worked really well, because Tom Samani, one of the best things he does is creates a great culture in the team, and that's what he did at the Matildas.
And there's been some criticism over the fact they haven't appointed a female coach yet, but that's identified in here as a separate action point. And you could argue they should have been taking consideration of it for this appointment, but there's nothing to suggest that they didn't. Right representation was on the panel who selected him, that if they felt there was a female candidate better than him, they could have gone that way. But those people on the panel who represented the right groups to push that as a thing were there and agree this was the best appointment. So yeah, I don't criticize that. We don't know the behind closed doors process.
Exactly.
And it's in here as a thing to work on for the future. And so if in the next 10 years we don't see some senior appointments in New Zealand football being women around the coaching and, you know, even just management staff, that'll be really concerning. But I think the first appointment they've made since this has become a real focus, let's not, you know, crucify them over that one.
No, the guy that they've appointed has got he's got an excellent record at this level, has a brilliant reputation of working well with women.
Yeah.
There's no downside. And all the relevant stakeholders were really happy about this. I've only seen a couple of people who were disappointed, and they're not disappointed with the guy, they're disappointed it wasn't a female.
Yeah.
Specific. So it's not necessarily that he's not the right person for the job. So got to give him a chance.
The main person that I think you're both referring to is our friend Enzo, who said almost explicitly on Twitter.
There's more than just him.
Okay, that's the
main
one.
The most high profile.
That's the main one that I've seen, where he's saying that it was disappointing that they didn't appoint a female, and that was seen to be the crux of his point. And I apologize if I got the wrong end of Enzo's stick, but I don't think I have. And I don't think that's what we need in this case. I don't think we need to go out there and appoint a female for the sake of appointing a female. We need to appoint the right person for our women's football team. Mm-hmm. And that happened to be Tom Samani.
It doesn't matter who that person is. Yeah. And as long as they are open to anybody applying that is relevantly qualified, that's all you can really ask.
Yeah. And it seems like these recommendations are going to be put into place. And this is a great thing for the new CEO to refer to. This action plan thing is like, hey, can you implement this for us? Can you make sure that we do this? That'll be what the new CEO has to do.
That's probably a good point to plug Enzo's podcast, because I'm sure he has greater discussion about this.
Oh, totally.
Because I can't imagine it hasn't come up. So if you want to listen to them talking about women's football and particularly the National Women's League, you should go check out The Return Fixture. I've been listening to it so far and it's good. I mean, you know, they're starting out. This is their first go at it, and, you know, a little bit scratchy the first few episodes, but there's good content in there. Yeah, so totally. Well worth a listen.
I don't feel like we have to cover the women's league and do
a because they do such a good job.
Because realistically, none of us have time to go and watch the women's league, and we have to pick and choose what we watch. But go and listen to Return Fixture if you're interested, and please do if you're not, because you'll have your eyes open to this other league that happens. And so, better to listen to them talk about it because they know what they're talking about as well, whereas we don't.
Yeah,
so.
And that's the thing. I do watch some of these women's league games, and I watch the W League here in Wellington. But at the W League level, I know the players. At the National Women's League level, I just don't know the players, so I can't talk knowledge.
It makes it hard.
Whereas Enzo and the crew, Ella and Helena, really do. And so I'm going to leave it to them.
Yeah. And I think that is everything for this week's podcast. I don't have anything else to add. And all the food has been finished at the table. Dave's nachos are gone. Cam's chicken wings were gone a long time ago.
They do not last long.
No.
They are delicious.
I know.
How was your glass of water, Patrick?
My glass of water was great. I am saving money.
Fair enough. I'm guessing you've probably got something else on tonight as well, so you need to stay sober for it.
No. But after we recorded the worst game on Sunday, I had to go and play my violin at rehearsal. Made a couple of beers before that, and that was fine. So
fair enough.
Yeah, I can have beers if I want, and I just didn't feel like a beer, which is fine. I will feel like a beer on Saturday, though, and I'll be having many of them.
I'm the last person who will be ever giving you shit about not drinking.
Yeah, totally. That's fine. Anyway, that'll do us for this week. On behalf of the three of us, and Frosty wasn't here, thank you so much for listening. We're back next week, hopefully with 7 points from 3 games, which would be amazing.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Would be very nice. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Sneaky Background Bo Rap brings you.
Sandstorm Rave on Saturday night at the football brings you.